You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, the federal government hired out-of-work writers during the Great Depression to produce travel guides for every state in the Union. We'll learn about the history of the project from an author who says the books were sometimes patriotic, sometimes pessimistic, but ultimately helped to rediscover America. Now, summers are always hot in western states, but this year the heat is setting records. Temperatures in states like Nevada and Arizona have already hit 115 degrees. Residents are being warned that they can get third-degree burns from asphalt. Big heat waves are predicted now for the Pacific Northwest as well. We're talking about the heat wave moving through the western U.S. and the role of climate change. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about the heat wave out west? Are you worried about wildfires? Have you lived in that region? What are you seeing there? What are you hearing from your friends and family out there? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Jonathan Martin is a professor in UW-Madison's Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. He's also one of the weather guys on the Larry Miller Show. Jonathan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Rob. It's a pleasure.
As summers get hot, we know that. How out of the ordinary, though, is this heat wave we're seeing out west?
This is really out of the ordinary. You're right. It always gets warmer in the summertime. And there in places in the southwest, which was really visited strongly by this event last week, it's not uncommon to have a number of days where in a summer where the temperature is above 100 degrees. In fact, in some places, 110 isn't really out of the ordinary a few times a year. But it's the number of times and the persistence of this particular extreme heat that has been extremely unusual. And it's, as you pointed out in your intro, it's moving into the Pacific Northwest, where places like Seattle and Portland, where Seattle, I think, has had 3 days ever in its history where the high temperature has been 100 degrees since 1945. It stands to have a chance at three in a row this weekend into Monday. So that would simply be unprecedented really a telltale signal that something beyond natural variability probably is running a bit of the show here.
Before we dig into that, I just want to talk about the seriousness of this. When we think about deadly natural disasters, I think of tornadoes, hurricanes, earthquakes. Heat waves, though, as I understand it, Jonathan, are some of the deadliest disasters in the U.S. and beyond.
Yes, they are. In fact, I think they might be the most deadly weather disaster in the United States because they affect so many different types of people, both elderly, young people, people with respiratory illnesses, depending on where you live. Let's say Seattle is the largest city in the U.S. with the low, how do you put this? It's one of the big cities in the U.S. with the lowest air conditioning in homes. And so if they get to 100 three straight days, it's going to be a lot of in all those different groups, elderly and so on, who have never experienced such a thing. And it compromises breathing. It compromises all manner of things. I don't think we have to even go back very far in our own history. Remember in Chicago in July of 1995, I think 800 or almost 900 people, it was close to 800, close to 900 people died during that very short-lived but extreme heat event in the middle of July that month. And around the world, this is true in many other locations, as you might guess, where, you know, poverty or other types of conditions, lacking infrastructure, keep air conditioning out of the normal day-to-day experience of most people. So it's very, very bad. And I think it does kill more people per year than just about any other weather disaster.
You mentioned this is not just normal variation. To what extent can we say this is a symptom, or at least the risk of this kind of heat wave was increased by climate change?
That's an excellent question. As it's occurring, it's difficult to make a statement definitively about, well, this amount of the event is attributable to what's going on in the background as the climate warms. However, I can say a couple of different things. Heat waves in particular are mobilized by an interaction between lack of precipitation, so drought, sometimes moderate, sometimes extreme, and the individual weather conditions that are occurring over the region. So in other words, if it stays dry over a location for an extended period of time, that instigates a drought there. That also makes it a lot easier for daytime insulation, sunshine, to warm the air. And so you not only have hotter daytime temperatures that compound the drought and make it even worse, you also have an inability to really cool off overnight. There's no evaporation going on of groundwater. It's just out of play. And that makes everything warmer. And usually the conditions that instigate the drought are also in the large scale in the atmosphere are the same kinds of conditions that will instigate a series of of warm days in the summertime because the skies are clear and the days are longer. So that's definitely an interactive process. And if the ball gets rolling in a certain direction, then it tends to compound the rolling and make it a little bit worse. Now, if in the background, beyond that sort of natural set of circumstances, if you have a gradual warming of the planet that makes already arid locations like in the desert Southwest even more arid, then naturally you're going to be visited by more frequent and longer lasting heat waves and droughts. And that's been a prediction now from climate scientists for 10 or 15 years. Increasingly loudly, they're making that prediction. Here we are, in, you know, 2 days into our summer and already experiencing unprecedented mid to late summer conditions in a large part of the western part of our own country.
Talking to Jonathan Martin, professor in UW-Madison's Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences, looking at the big heat wave and drought in a lot of the western United States, some of the causes behind that, the weather and the climate changes behind it. You could join in with your questions or maybe your own experiences if you've been out there. 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. Jonathan, we're hearing about this heat dome. That's part of the, I guess, proximate cause of this. What is that?
I don't really like that term. It's not very scientific. Okay. What it is it's a dome of high pressure. I'd say I like that term better. So there's pressures that are unusually high, both near the surface and at different elevations in the atmosphere. And the persistence of this region of high pressure, or heat dome, as it's being called in the news, it does a lot of things. It not only ensures continued clear skies, which exacerbates the drought conditions, which in turn exacerbates the daytime heating and the inability to cool overnight. So it makes the heat wave worse. And people have said, I think, in the news, too, that there tends to be a gentle sinking of the air underneath these so-called heat domes. That's not untrue. It's just that it's forced subsidence of the air that is associated, again, with the region of high pressure that extends throughout the whole troposphere, the portion of the atmosphere in which all the weather occurs. So all of what's being said is all correct. It's being attributed to something that meteorologists wouldn't exactly describe as a heat dome. But it's not untrue what's being said. And that's a persistent feature. It tends to climatologically set up over the high terrain of the western United States, sets up over the high terrain of the Himalaya, and in fact instigates the Indian monsoon in that part of the world. So these things are climatological features. They happen every single year to one extent or another. This year, it's gotten a head start because things are drier than normal and therefore warmer than normal.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. John is with us in Plainfield. John, hi.
Hi, I have I guess this is sort of an ecological question, but with this unprecedented heat wave, how many more years can these heat waves happen before the biodiversity of the West Coast is irredeemably altered, like irrevocably destroyed? Maybe 1 year like this could be damaging, but would 5 years like this be completely destructive?
John, thanks a lot for that call. Jonathan, I know biologists and ecologists are looking at these questions. Do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's a very good question. I will defer to my expert colleagues in those other fields, but I can comment on the meteorological interactions that go on when the ecology is disrupted. Let's just take one example. Imagine that during this heat wave, all of the vegetation in the western United States, high terrain or otherwise, is being dried out. The water is being sucked right out of it, and that's disappearing forever. And until it's replenished by either irrigation or by natural precipitation, you end up having standing timber that's a lot drier in late June than it should be across the West. That raises the incidence and risk of forest fires. And if the forest fires, like we saw last summer, really get going early this year and turn into conflagrations of even bigger scale, then you end up with ecological scarring that is very, very hard to recover from in the short term. And so you start to mobilize forces here that can do some fairly substantial semi-permanent to even permanent damage in some of these locations. And that will change the landscape of parts of the West almost surely if several of these types of years in a row start to occur. And there's no particular reason to expect that the conditions that underlie the instigation of this drought and heat wave are really going to be dramatically ameliorated as the years go by, as the climate continues to gradually warm.
Jonathan, our eyes are on the West now, but here in Wisconsin and in the Midwest, what are the concerns with changes here because of climate change?
Well, some of the concerns are roughly the same. In the present situation right now, we're going to enjoy a fairly cool week relative to what we had the last couple of weeks because we're on the eastern side of that giant region of high pressure that sits now over the northwest United States, puts us in northwesterly flow at upper levels and tends to keep us a little bit cooler than we've been. But we have been notably dry here this spring. It hasn't really, since April 1st, I think we're still running, even after the last couple of days, and one of those days with some heavy rain locally, we're still running more than 5 inches below normal. And that's really bad news for this time of year. I mean, we're at the peak growing season for a lot of the crops around here, beginning late June and through the month of July. And without natural water, we're going to put a lot of stress on our irrigation capabilities. And so that gets to be a big deal. And that is one of the potential future scenarios that we see in an ever warming climate, is that places that have been able to depend on regular summertime rains like we have for, millennia in the central part of North America may end up developing a little bit more dryness. And that gets to be a crisis. Water is going to be a really valuable commodity if we don't, begin to take steps to move ourselves back toward something more normal for our climate.
Jonathan, thanks a lot for being with us today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
That's Jonathan Martin. He's a professor in UW-Madison's Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. He's also one of the weather guys on the Larry Miller Show. Tune in on Monday to hear him and Steve Ackerman break down what kind of weather you can expect in Wisconsin this summer. That's Monday at 11:45 on the Larry Miller Show. We're going to keep up our conversation about heat waves and find out how the heat impacts our electric grid and what kind of changes we might need to deal with a warming climate. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you experienced an electricity blackout during hot or extreme cold weather? Maybe this year in Texas or California. So what was that like? And you have questions for our next guest, who's an expert on the energy grid. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk about heat waves, climate change, and now the strain on our electric grid and how we can prepare for the future. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. If you have questions about how events like heat waves can put strain on our electric grid, what we would need to do to improve them in the future, 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Lena Rold is an assistant professor of electrical and computer engineering at UW-Madison and an expert on the electric grid. Lena, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. Well, it's a pleasure to be here.
Well, last time we talked to you about extreme cold knocking out a lot of the power in Texas. Now we have states like Texas, and California, maybe some others, asking people to try to limit their electricity usage because of heat waves. Can you talk about the impact that a heat wave can have on our grid, our power supply?
So essentially, it's kind of interesting. Last time I was here, as you said, we were talking about extreme cold and how that was impacting generation capacity. And this time around, we are talking about how very hot weather is impacting the grid. And it's a similar dynamic because essentially during normal operation, the grid has a lot of generation capacity and it has more generation capacity than what is needed to fulfill demand. And having that kind of more generation capacity than what we have demand is important for a reliable grid operation. So now that the weather is hot, the difference between the available generation capacity and the demand for electricity is reduced because of three things. So the first and most important thing is that customers, they need more electricity because they want to cool their homes. Because they use air conditioners and so on, this increases electricity demand. Secondly, heat can also impact the ability of generators to produce power. So, for example, some thermal generators, such as coal and natural gas power plants, they rely on cooling. And the cooling mechanisms that come through air or water, they are often less effective when the weather is hot, meaning that they can generate less power than normally. And then in addition, as we also hear of the droughts that are out there in the West, sometimes the combination of drought and hot weather and having just generally less access to water can even more impact the ability of generators to actually produce the amount of power that they normally could. And then finally, in addition to the impact on demand and on generation, hot weather can also reduce the amount of electricity that you can send across an electric line. So that can further impact the ability to import electricity from nearby regions. So when we have this hot weather, it really impacts both demand, generation, and the import capacity of the grid. And that can lead to the situation where we might have a lack of generation capacity and we might not have the electricity we need in order to give everyone what they really want.
Now, Lena, we just heard from our guest meteorologist, things are getting hotter. We have record heat in a lot of the country. And with climate change, we may be seeing the future today. Are there ways we can look at our power system and say, we're going to change it to heat proof a little bit? Are there changes we can make to do that?
Yeah, well, so first of all, we have to start planning for it, right? And we have to think about, you know, what are all these ways in which extreme heat is going to potentially impact the grid. And think about, you know, what does happen when people are installing more air conditioners, as we also just heard, right? Or maybe also the scale of a heat wave like this maybe it becomes more widespread. And so in order to think about this, we really have to get better at planning. And there are some kind of aspects of this. I mean, from some of the grid operators, we will hear that they are asking generators and transmission operators to postpone maintenance. And so you could ask yourself, like, why would anyone put a generator off the grid in order to make repairs at this time of the year when it's so hot? And the answer to that could be that because it usually isn't this hot in June. And so as we are seeing climate change, things change, right? That's kind of part of it. And so sometimes the weather becomes hot at an earlier time in the summer than what we are used to. Sometimes it gets hotter than what we are used to. And then there are other kind of knock-on effects. For example, you might see that there are generators that, again, have to go offline because they are not able to produce that you maybe hadn't thought about. And so I think we are sort of starting to learn about what are all these different ways in which a hotter climate can impact the grid. And so we have to think a bit creatively about what are all these ways, what are all the things we have to think about these days that maybe we didn't have to think about as much before.
Talking to Lena Roald, Assistant Professor of Electrical and Computer Engineering at UW-Madison, expert on the electric grid, talking about keeping up the electricity supply during climate change. There's a lot of places in the country affected by heat waves. Lena, I've read that Texas has some signs of hope with a lot of solar facilities coming online over the course of the next year. It doesn't help today and tomorrow, but for the future, maybe. Does having more solar in the mix help us?
Yeah, so generally having more generation capacity will help us provide electricity at the times when we need it. So the question is just how much do we need? And in particular, on days like this where solar and, you know, a lot of sunlight frequently corresponds with a time when it is the hottest, that is oftentimes when, you know, it's really helpful to have solar on the grid because hot weather also comes oftentimes with sun. And, you know, I think it's also important here to take a step back and think about all the different ways in which a grid contributes to climate change and to our climate change adaptation and mitigation. So if you think about climate change mitigation as trying to prevent climate change from happening, then, you know, renewable electricity is a really important part of that. To have renewable electricity available for cooling, that is a key point of what we would want as the climate gets hotter. And then, of course, we also have to make sure that the grid is able to sustain the weather that comes with climate change. So as it gets hotter, we have to make sure that we have sufficient transmission capacity, that our lines are able to withstand higher temperatures, that our generators are able to withstand higher temperatures. And, you know, having more solar that has this really good benefit that it coincides, it generates more power when it is also really sunny and hot, that can be a really, really good thing and a good and important part of this mix.
We're hearing, of course, talk in the nation's capital about investments in infrastructure. And I've heard concerns, Lena, that a lot of our energy grid infrastructure in parts of the country is really, really old. Is that in itself a problem? And how hard is it to update and refresh that kind of stuff?
Yeah. So, well, technically speaking, you could build more transmission lines, right? The question is, where do you build them and who is going where are they going to go through? And so there's often a lot of local opposition to new transmission lines. They don't look particularly beautiful. And it is also, of course, expensive to build those lines. And I think we are starting to see, one of the big questions are whether it would make sense to also build out a grid that is more for tomorrow than what it was for the past. So probably anyways, regardless of, the infrastructure that is aging, we also have to think about what infrastructure do we need for tomorrow? Will we need longer and stronger transmission line to transport power from, across a larger portion of the country? Or will we see a situation where so many people have solar PVs on their roofs that maybe don't need that much long distance transmission? And so I think finding these kind of ways in which, all of these things interact, that is really important. And so, I'm optimistic and hopeful that we are going to be able to upgrade the grid and make it work for tomorrow. But yes, it will require some investment and investments over time.
Lena, thanks so much for joining us again.
Yeah, happy to be here.
That's Lena Roald, Assistant Professor of Electrical and Computer Engineering at UW-Madison, with us today to talk about how intense heat impacts the electric grid and our power supply. Earlier, we heard from a weather expert about why we're seeing record-setting heat waves in states across the Southwest and coming up the Pacific Northwest. Coming up, the government hired out-of-work writers to assemble travel guides during the Great Depression. We'll find out what they chose to write about and what it could teach us about America. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.